Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. Glad you tuned in today. A happy Tuesday to you. I am excited about today's topic, and I've been wanting to bring this guest back for a long time, and today just seems the perfect day to do that. Before I bring her on, I've got a couple questions for you. Here's one. Do you believe that the need dictates the call? Do you believe that the need before you always dictates the call of God on you? So every time you see something, a need, are you the person to fulfill it? I actually don't think the need dictates the call, but we can talk more about that. I don't believe that every good opportunity is always a God opportunity. And maybe you've heard it said before that if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. Well, today we're going to be talking about simplicity and what it means to make space and room in our lives to actually live life. Well, here's my other question for you. What makes your heart feel at rest and at peace, and what gives you joy? I also asked it on my Facebook page. That's facebook.com/deeperlifeinchrist. And Starla says, Jesus singing over me. Pinsy says, silence, being left alone and listening to the still of the day. Nothing but the birds chirping. I have to agree with you there. Dawn says, when I surrender my every worry and I concentrate on the Lord. And Maria says, worship, pure, full, sweet worship. So what about you? What makes your heart at rest? And for me also, a fast bike ride on the trails just makes my heart sing. So I'm talking to my guest today, Roseanne Frazee. She's co-authored the book with her husband, Randy, called Real Simplicity, Making Room for Life. We had her on quite a while ago, so it's definitely time to have her back. So let me tell you about her, and we'll get the conversation started. Roseanne has been on the journey to real simplicity for 29 years with her husband, Randy. She has been a pastor's wife for 20 of those years. She's a mother to 4 grown children and has 1 granddaughter. She loves running, reading, cooking, interpreting for the deaf at her church, and spending time with family and friends, playing with her granddaughter, and mostly spending time with her husband and best friend, Randy. Roseanne, you are a sister of my heart. You and I connect on Twitter, and it's so fun to have you back today. Thanks for joining us.
I am so honored to be back with you, Susie. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, we like to start out all of our conversations with our guests talking scripture, and I'm wondering if you either have a life verse or a verse that the Lord's been speaking to you about these days.
I think for the last year, he's been speaking to me about being thankful, and the verse that I've been using kind of as a springboard is Hebrews 12:28. Therefore, since we're receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with the reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire.
Yeah.
I just love that, thinking about God being a consuming fire. In Deuteronomy, it says he's a consuming fire and he's also a jealous God.
Mm.
If you're going to have an obsession, it needs to be God.
Mm.
So if I want to obsess on something, that's what I'd like to be doing. And also the thankfulness brings me such contentedness of where I'm at and what I have, and it allows me to worship him, and I'm not thinking about my next thing to do or my next purchase or what I need to get done.
So good. Reminds me of that other passage. I can't remember if it's 1 Thessalonians, but it's, you know, thanking God is always his will. So there's times where we just wrestle, what's your will for me? We can always know that being thankful is a great start, and don't you think that always does bring godly perspective?
It really does. It really does. It changes your perspective from thinking about not what you don't have to thinking about what you have. And therefore, like I said, the contentedness just comes.
Mm.
And I'm so grateful that I've been on this journey. You know, I just a friend just told me recently, and I've verified it, Dallas Willard, great man of the faith that we just lost, I think on May 8th, his last words were, thank you.
Really?
And when I heard that, I thought, God, I'm not there yet, but boy, I want to be there.
So good. That's a great exhortation. This is exactly why we ask our guests for a word, because it really just it brings the word to life for us. And I know that that was for somebody today. Well, when you step back and you take a broad snapshot of our culture, what words would you use to describe how we live and what drives us?
I think I would say we live a frantic pace.
Mm.
Not a fast pace, because a fast pace will bring you euphoria. It's exciting. It's, but a frantic pace. It's out of control.
Yeah.
Out of control. We're pursuing the next purchase. We're pursuing the next thing on our to-do list.
Mm. And what fruit would you say that's bearing overall in our culture?
I think that it's bearing a number of ills in our society. Mm-hmm. There's a new illness that's known only to the North American continent. It's called crowded loneliness. There's so many people in our lives, and yet we don't have deep, connected relationships. But the saddest thing I see is that we're losing our fight for the family. We're losing our kids.
Yeah. I read something probably about a year ago that childhood ulcers are on the rise, where once they were non-existent, and it was directly attributed to the pace that we're living. And isn't that sad that we are modeling something that is stressing our kids to the point of illness?
Yes, absolutely. I think David Elkind would echo those words in his book, The Hurried Child.
Wow.
We're always telling our kids, hurry up, get in the car. We've got to go here. We've got to go there. We've got to get to soccer practice. And it's all good things. But we're not teaching our kids that they need to take time and replenish.
Well, you know, I, like you, am a taskmaster. I'm pretty driven and disciplined and focused. And when I look back, you know, my younger years as a young mom, and I battled Lyme disease, so I was so desperately sick when my kids were little that the picture of way back then was me on my bed, hooked up to my IV, and my husband and my three little boys carrying the meal into me. And I would grieve over that, going, this is backwards. I need to be taking them to the park. But I was so sick, we couldn't do a lot of the driven things that friends were doing. And it was amazing. I see now that God is cultivating this intimacy in our family, because my boys are grown now, and none of them have a tolerance for the over busy life, because we couldn't function that way, because I did not have the health to sustain it. And that was such a burden back then, but I truly see it as a blessing now. And you want to just, you know, comment on that at all? And as far as when you see what is happening to young families today?
Well, I think the first thing that I did not know that about you, that just connects me with you even more. Things that we think are so awful and take us out of the rat race of society, like an illness like that, can turn around. God can totally use everything in our lives. Mm. I'm so grateful He's done that for your boys. Mm. I think our huge myth and the first thing we're losing out on as families is the dinner table. We have not regularly shared meals around the table. We've done fast food in the car on the way to a baseball practice, or we're watching TV and we're putting the kids in front of the TV with a meal so that we can get more done. The Columbia University put out a study several years that I just love. It's one of my favorites, because it has told us that if you want to do one thing as a parent to make sure that your kids stay away from drugs, alcohol abuse, premarital sex, and I'm sorry, I just lost the other one.
But, yeah.
If you want to keep your kids from gangs, that's what it is, gangs. If you want to keep them from those things, the best thing you can do is to have dinners five nights a week around your dinner table.
Wow. That's amazing.
It is amazing. And they polled all these kids, and that's what they said. The kids that were not into those things, The number one thing they said was, my parents, I have a seat at their table. I belong somewhere. So there's no need to go join a gang or to do something to be accepted, like drugs or alcohol.
Well, that's such a good point, because it is wired in us to be connected by families, by deep relationships. That is part of our DNA, isn't it? So if we're not getting it at home and in deep relationships, we're going to have a counterfeit outlet, aren't we?
We will find it somewhere, yeah.
Well, when you think about kids who are driving the pace, I mean, there's kids who are feeling the same. I want to do this. I have to be at this thing. I have to be involved in this too. So parents aren't not only setting the pace, but kids are buying into it because it is the culture. So how does a parent who says, okay, enough already, but they're hearing their kids going, but I want, how do they set a different pace? Although it's up to them, not up to their kids. But how do they do that?
Well, I think that you have to be intentional. You can't let it. We were caught off guard, to be honest with you. We totally were told when our first son turned four that I was late. No, he was five. I'm sorry. I missed the boat because I should have had him signed up for soccer at four. And I said, oh, my goodness. I felt
You're
horrible.
Kidding.
So, of course, I put him in the car. I rushed right up, signed him up for soccer, and he was in at five. He ended up doing really well. But at the same time, that started for us cycle of we were running and we thought they had to do it all. And we came to a season where we were literally splitting up. We were going to a baseball game and having our kids change in the car to get to the soccer practice at the other end of the city. We were not having dinners as a family. We were not we were eating fast food in the car. We were separated. My husband and I were not seeing each other because we were at different sporting events. We had four children who were in two or three things apiece. And I woke up one morning, one spring, and I just started crying. And Rainey said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I cannot think about where everybody has to be today at certain times and who's going to get them there and how we're going to work this out." I had been doing that every single day for years, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And I went through a serious time of depression. And so something had to change. And the hardest thing to do is to go to your kids and say, "We're taking you out of baseball."
Yeah.
But the harder thing is to go to the coach and tell them. Mm. Because when we went to the coach said, "Well, if your son doesn't play fall ball, he can't come back to his spot in the spring. We will give it to somebody else." Mm. And we finally had to have the courage to say, "Yes, we're okay with that." And you know what? When we did that, my kids never looked back. They didn't complain about it, and they've never missed it. They've never said one time that they missed that. It was more about us. Mm. And I think we're not called to, it's what you said, we're not called to be their friend. We're called to be their parent. And this is part of parenting.
Yeah. I mean, truly, part of it is discerning. This is not good for you, or this is not good for the overall family, and we're in this together. And boy, it sure does take some courage and some tenacity, because that is the rat race that we're in. And so you hit this place of chaos, and really, though, your message is so loud and clear, Roseanne, about simplicity. So how'd you get there? That was one thing. You pulled them out of ball, and that was your thing. So tell us what else you did so that you could move your life and your family towards a place of more simplifying living.
Well, what we did was we told them one sport at a time. If I had to go back and do it again, I would push the sports off as long as I could until they're in junior high and high school, because when they're in junior high and high school, the practices are right after school or right before school, so it's not going to interfere with your dinner time, which made a huge difference when our kids got to that point and we realized. And I am so sad that I didn't have this wisdom when my kids were tiny. Mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed that I didn't. And the other thing was we started having dinners, and instead of my husband coming home and having a quick dinner with us and then going back to his briefcase full of work and his computer in the bedroom, he quit doing that. And he quit having evening meetings, which in the ministry, if you know anything about ministry, we work with volunteers. That's very difficult to do. And it took a while for us to get to the point where we didn't have very many evening meetings. Mm. But we opted for Saturday morning to be a meeting time for him. And we started lingering around the dinner table and sharing our days. And what was happening is we were listening to each other, and we were engaging. And we really got to know each other all over again.
That's so beautiful, Roseanne, because you know when you're talking to somebody that has to go, their body posture is, "I only got to make this quick, just got a few minutes." But we all do that. But a person especially, you know, I've got that. One of my kids takes a lot longer to get to what's going on under the surface, and he has to have some unhurried time for him to share, or he just won't. And so, boy, that is just so radical. It's sad, but it's radical what you're saying. To stop and to make plans, not to have plans into the evening. I'm thinking of somebody listening going, "You don't get it," which you totally do because you had four kids in sports. But the whole idea of pulling them out, going, then they won't have a chance for this or that. I think we have to just sort of separate productivity and even achievement with fruitfulness and virtue. So maybe make the distinction between the two and which really will carry them through life in those years once they get past the sporting age.
So true. That's so true. We have to realize as a parent that, you know, less than 1% of children who play sports are going to get a scholarship for, you know, and I think parents do that with if they think, if my son is good at something else, start him early, he'll get better, he'll be the best. and then he'll get a scholarship, and it'll pay for college. That's a worthy goal. However, less than 1% of kids will get that. Mm. So, putting it in perspective and realizing that probably won't work helps. It really helps.
Yeah.
And then again, just having the courage to say, no, we're not going to do that because it's at this time. And protecting that dinner time, it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard, and it does take some courage.
And you think about once you get them through the sporting age, I'm sure I've got some people who want to talk with us about this, and I'm going to open the phone lines in a minute. But once you get past that, when you think about what makes for your son and daughter to be a future wife or husband, to be patient, to be loving, to be grounded, to see family modeled, those are the things that are going to go with them so much more than the rat race and never connecting as a family. They just are. And so we can't trade one for the other. If we have to trade, we've got to choose, right? So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm talking to Roseanne Frazee today. We've got three copies of her beautiful book, Real Simplicity, Making Room for Life. And I mean it when I say this is a radical message, but it's an invitation from the Lord himself. And rest really is a call from him, and it's our birthright, and we'll fall without it. And so somehow, some way, we got to figure out how to live out of a heart at rest and make room for life. So what do you think? What's your challenge? And maybe you've got a question for our guest today. As I said, we've got three copies, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. So I would love to know, what was the impact on Randy when he stopped meeting at night? I mean, our kids are grown. We're very guilty, if I can't think of a better word. We're working into the night. Where we get home, we eat, we open our computers back up. And rereading your book again, I was just so convicted of that. So I want to know, what was the ripple effect for Randy and for you with him just going, I'm not doing this at night anymore during the week? How did that impact him?
Well, first of all, it took a while, but he hit a wall, and he explains it in the book. He went for 45 days without sleeping, and I'm not talking about falling asleep and waking up. He didn't go to sleep. Mm. And he finally went to the doctor, and the doctor told him he had it probably wasn't ever going to change. He'd probably need medication for the rest of his life, but, you know, that there was a slight chance that if he changed his schedule and worked within the rhythms that God had created. He didn't even know our doctor was a Christian, but the rhythms that God had created for our bodies, that there was a chance that he may not have to be on the medication all of his life. So he went on the medication for a few weeks, and he started researching Genesis, and sure enough, there out of the pages, first few pages of Scripture, we find out that he noticed in creation that there was evening and there was morning the first day. There was evening and there was morning the second day, and so on and so forth, all the way through the 6 days of creation. If you notice there, we feel like it should say morning and evening. However, it says evening and then morning all the way through. And he realized also that in the Jewish culture, whatever was most important was put first. Knowing that and going back to the account in Genesis, he began to feel like God was saying to him that the most important season of the day is from 6 o'clock until 10 p.m. And he put together a schedule that basically said that you work from sunup to sundown, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. approximately, and then you come home and you have your relational season starting with dinner at 6 p.m. until around 10 p.m., and you go to bed and you rest for the 8 hours. And he religiously did that. He didn't pick up his computer. So that was the start for him. So then, after going to the doctor, he went to the elders at the church who were meeting on Wednesday night. No, I'm sorry, it was Monday night for their elder meeting. And these meetings would go on to 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning because no one had to be anywhere. Wow. They were just going home to sleep. And he took basically his doctor's note, if you will, and said, I can't do this anymore. And they started meeting in the morning. And because they were meeting at 6 o'clock in the morning, everyone had to be at work. So it automatically ended the meeting. So that was the first step, was getting, you know, the elders' buy-in. And then we started using Saturday morning as a viable time for him to have meetings. But he would not violate his nightly ritual of going to bed on time and relaxing before he went to bed.
I love this. And one of the things I love about the Saturday morning thing is you're going to have a very efficient meeting because you're not going to want to squander your whole day. And we squander rest any day, any time. That's what we dip into thinking we can get more done. But that we pay a price in the long run, don't we?
We do. Mm. We do. To our health.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is such an important message. I feel like having Roseanne on once a month until we get this right.
I'm still trying to get it right myself. Yeah. It's an everyday battle.
It is. Because the culture pulls. It's a current that is so strong, and that's why this is so important. So I read in the book, Roseanne, that maybe it was Randy's words, but he said, one of you said, I don't sleep. I don't need medication to sleep anymore. Was that him saying that?
That was him.
Yeah,
that was his battle.
Yeah.
Mine was more the depression. His was the sleep, and he does not take medication, and he's never slept better.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. Well, talk about the whole idea of community. Like, you live in your community. What a concept. I mean, this is amazing to me. Well, it's almost like you draw a circle around your community, and that's where you live. And explain what we're talking about here, because here again, it's a great challenge for many of us.
It goes back to the idea of the crowded loneliness. We have all these relational worlds that we create for ourselves, and we've been able to do this because they're all over the map. We can do that because we have the automobile, a wonderful invention. So we can go here and go there, and we're constantly running. So we have our world of school, our kids' school. We have our work. That's the husband's work. And then if the wife works, there's another relational circle. Then we have our relational circle at church. And church really isn't just one relational circle, because the average family is involved to 3 to 4 relational circles within the church. We've got student ministries for the kids. We've got the Bible study for the ladies, the men's Bible study. Perhaps the dad serves on the deacon committee, or you're a prayer warrior for the church. So you've got all these relational circles at church. The average family has 30 relational worlds that they try to manage, and every one of them involves a commute here or there. And none of those worlds overlap, meaning that no one in the husband's work circle knows his family or any of the people in his other relational worlds. And also church, a lot of times we're involved in separate relationships, and we don't get to know the family unit as a whole. And I don't think you can really know someone unless you know their close-knit community. So what happened to us was we realized that we had all of these disconnected circles, and then you add your church-sponsored small group, which doesn't include the kids of the family. It's just the adults, and you're driving across town to get to it in the evening. And so we were frantic like everybody else. And we realized one night as we were driving out of our neighborhood, we had actually gotten to know some of our neighbors right around us due to a couple moving in who was very relational. They came down and got to know us. And we started doing barbecues together and playing kickball in the street. And one night, after a couple years of this developing, we got to know more and more neighbors, and we did a block party together and got to know even more neighbors, and it just became a community. And one night we were getting in our car to go to our church-sponsored small group, and as we went, my husband had driven to pick the babysitter up, come home, we were in our car leaving, and we were waving goodbye to our neighbors as they were all out in their front yard barbecuing bratwurst, and we're leaving our neighbors to go to our contrived community, that's what we called it later, our contrived biblical community. And my husband and I looked at each other and we said, we don't want to go. We want to hang out here with our neighbors. And that night, we went to our small group, but when we came home, and I think it was even before we got home, we started asking, what if hanging out with our neighbors counted? Instead of trying to get a couple who moved in who was so relational, their name was Tom and Bonnie, what if we didn't try to get Tom and Bonnie to the church and then to our church-sponsored small group community across the city? What if we just hung out with them in the front yard, got to know them, and they got to know Christ and see him through us living together?
What a concept. Talking to Roseanne Frazee, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take your calls and talk more about how to cultivate a life of simplicity so we can actually start enjoying life. More with Roseanne Frazee in just a moment. For tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to our friend Roseanne Frazee about such an important topic, about simplicity. You listen to that song from Carrie Job. You know, to me, once you've been sick, once you've had a crisis in your life and you come to that realization of how fragile life can be, I think the best gift you can give God and give each other is your presence, to be fully present and not to be in the rat race. And so I believe when we come to the end of our days, we are definitely not going to wish we would have done more, tried to achieve or accomplish more. We would have been, let me be present with the ones I love, be present with God, and really be aware of how he's moving in our midst. Whitney has been waiting patiently on the line to ask you a question, Roseanne. Whitney, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Whitney.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, do you have any suggestions for people, you know, who work seasonally, or like my family, for instance, is in agriculture. And so we just feel like, you know, right now we're feeling pummeled with work, and it comes again, you know, throughout the summer and then again in the fall, but we're able to rest in the winter. But do you have a suggestion to get, to get some sort of like annual flow, I guess you would say, because we work, you know, we work during the nice weather really hard, but, you know, when it's winter, we're able to rest more.
Right. You know, God not only created the daily rhythms for us, he also created the seasonal rhythms. And we talk about that in real simplicity. He did create the winter so that the bears hibernate. And I think hibernation is a great idea, by the way. But, yes, I think that you probably may need some extra help. I don't know if you can afford to hire extra help, but the agriculture society is actually the type of society that the Jewish culture lived for many years. And when the lights went out, when the sun went down, there was no more work. So the seasons get longer in the summertime is what you're saying, and you work longer. Is that right? Is she gone?
Let's see if we can get her back. Is she there?
Okay. I'm still here. Yeah,
yes.
No, that's right. The season, you know, yeah, we work when the sun is shining. So,
absolutely.
With the changes in agriculture, you also have a lot of, you know, computer type work to do in the evenings too when the sun does go down. So,
right.
You know, just looking for a balance there, I guess.
Mm. Right. Well, hopefully, you know, I know that you have to work during the sun up hours when, you know, God's provided that. But the computer work can probably be done, you know, maybe spread it out a little bit more, maybe not try to do it. I don't know. I'm not experienced in that kind of work. I would love to advise you better.
And don't you think, Roseanne, you know, his yoke is easy and his burden is light. This is what I'm realizing, because my thing isn't, you know, farming the land. I can only imagine what life is like for you. But my thing is the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of email and Facebook messages that I've received, uh-huh. that people are waiting to hear back. But there is a point where I have to shut that thing down and go, I'm going to go be with my hubby, or I'm going to go walk my dog. Otherwise, I'll get swallowed alive. And so I'm wondering if just each of us, this is what I always ask, is Lord, show me, give me grace and motivation to do the next right thing. Whatever that is, if it's rest, if it's ride, if it's play, if it's work, just give me the nudge in my spirit so I know what the most fruitful next thing is. What do you think about that?
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And then also saying no to other things during that season.
Yeah.
Truthfully, you know, someone has wisely once said, time that isn't scheduled will get filled by the people in our lives. And it's so true. They will suck the last minute out of us if we let them.
Mm.
So saying no to other things, like even maybe church, something to do at church. Maybe you need to get out of that for a while, because this is what God's called you to do as well. Your work is done for God as well.
I think it was Craig Groeschel. We've had him on a few times, but he again is a pastor of a very large church, and he said to his volunteers, to his staff, you will not be at church more than two nights a week. And if you are, I want to talk with you, because you need to either be out in your community or home with your family, because there's nothing here that mandates you being here more than that. And he, too, has some pretty strong boundaries around family and community engagement. Before the break, you were talking about just sort of being in your community. And, you know, there's many who commute along. My hubby drives over an hour every day to work, and we're seriously praying now that our kids are grown, moving closer in, just so that we can simplify and add some hours to our week. But maybe say a word to that person who's commuting every which way and loves the idea of community living, where you're kind of trying to, you know, even purchasing things from a local store and contributing to the economy in your local community. Just say more about that idea of what the benefit would be.
That is a tremendous benefit, moving closer to your work world and cutting that commute, because commuting is not only sucks time away, it actually reduces your social capacity. For every 10 minutes you're in the car, it reduces your social capacity by 10%.
Wow.
So you're dwindling your social capacity. You don't have the energy to be social. It's not only the long time that it takes, it's also the fact that I'm so sorry. I just lost my thought.
Oh, it happens all the time. You got to love live radio. So
yeah,
exactly. The drive reduces your social capacity. It takes your time away from your schedule, and it makes your life disjointed. Go ahead.
It's also frustrating. Mm-hmm. How many of us love to sit in traffic? That's where I was going with it.
Yeah.
How many of us are not frustrated, and we wonder why road rage is an all-time high? You know, being in the car is not good. And there's many people I know that use the time in the car to worship God through music, and that's wonderful, and to talk to God. So if you have to be in the car, you can use that time and let him replenish your soul some through that.
Mm.
But if you don't have to be in the car, don't be in the car.
Mm.
I say go ahead and make that move for sure. And we actually because we started staying home in the evenings, we cut out the sporting practices mostly. In the evening, we would have dinner, and then we'd find like dinner was over, you know, after an hour and a half, and so now it's 7:30. Well, we still have light hours in the summer, so we would go out in the front yard, and we'd play kickball with our kids, or my husband would get his banjo out, and I'd get a book, and we'd sit in the front yard, and neighbors would walk by, and before long, after we did that routinely for several weeks, neighbors were not only walking by, they were stopping and talking, and we had to get extra chairs. And what that did for us, it enabled us to change our linear relationships that we were driving to into a circle of relationships with the families that lived right around us. My kids were going to school with these kids. I got to know the parents. We started carpooling. We started driving to the practices we did have to go to together. We'd take turns. We'd carpool to school in the morning. And just by virtue of all of those people knowing each other, it simplified our life.
Mm. And
all of a sudden, our worlds were overlapping.
Yeah, and your kingdom influence in your neighborhood is just so amazing when you think about it. And it's sad, we're totally guilty of this, at least when our kids were home, of driving them to youth group and driving them to this thing and that thing. Well, missing, you know, we'd connect with our neighbors in the street once in a while, but we had, you know, very full lives outside of our neighborhood, which is sad when you think about it.
Right, and God's called us. Well, the one thing that Jesus asked us to do was to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and spirit, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And the sad truth is 7 out of 10 people don't even know their neighbors. They don't know their first names.
And so, you got people watching out for you because you're in this community, in this neighborhood that you're kind of just doing life with these people. And so you actually do live in a community.
What a concept. Yeah. And, you know, the police department, your police department will tell you, if you know your neighbors and you're involved, the neighborhood is involved with each other, your crime rate will go down 40 to 60%.
Wow. That's amazing.
That says a lot.
It sure does. And I want let's switch gears to this whole accumulation of things. And here's another one. We're kind of rustling, kind of touching on some things that might be messing with you today. And so stick with us because it's important stuff. But, you know, talking to Dana Gresh yesterday about, and her really, her messages to young women getting so lost in God that if you want that guy to find you, he's got to seek God to find you. But underneath that whole message was this idea of a violent craving and how it's not just a girl being guy crazy. It's all of us going, I got to have that next thing. And, you know, really, I walked away from yesterday's show and I brought this into my prayer time this morning, just going, when we get to that place where I got to have that thing, we've got to be able to pause and say, Lord, that thing is actually a counterfeit. There may be nothing wrong with, you know, moving or buying that car that you need or whatever. But isn't it good just to stop for just a moment and go, is there a deeper need, God, that you actually want to fill that I'm looking to this thing for? Say a word about that, because, again, that contributes to the rat race, doesn't it?
Absolutely. If you look at the life of Jesus, there's a couple things you'll notice about him. And one of the major things is he didn't own anything. The Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head, the scripture tells us. He didn't own a lot of things. Now, I'm not suggesting that we sell everything and mooch off of all of our friends. That's not a good idea either. But the fact is, the less we have, the less we have to take care of. And that's freeing, actually. And yet, in America, we feel entitled to make the next purchase, and we feel like we're not successful if we don't have the new car or the bigger house. And not all of these things are bad in and of themselves, but when we buy a brand new car and then we can't afford it, and all we have to do is now work around the clock to make sure we can pay for the things we've accumulated, that's when that causes our relationships to get out of balance, because now we've got to work all the time to fund the brand new bigger house and the boat and the car that we had to have.
And that makes sense? Absolutely. That lifestyle of accumulation just really contributes to the whole culture of the rat race. And it's buying into the lie. And and I think so many who are on the rat race and feeling overspent in every way look at somebody who's maybe living a more simple life and going, if only I could get there. And it sounds like even some of the changes you made in your life, they were kind of ruthless at times where you are going kind of upstream, aren't you, to not meet at night and those kinds of, it's not easy, but it's worth it, right?
It's not easy, and I will tell you, it takes time. It took us probably 2 years before we began to see a difference in our schedule, significant difference. Mm. We began, you know, making the difference with dinners. But before we felt relief, it took us a while because we were so caught up in it, Susie. I'm embarrassed to even say that.
Well, you represent all of us. So I appreciate your honesty about it. And in my book, Growing Grateful Kids, I have a chapter on playing and how I say, and I believe this, and I think you probably do too, that playing is an act of faith, because to me it says there's more on God's shoulders than on mine. And you, I was so happy to see that you addressed the art of play in your book. So say a word about what the art of play is all about.
Well, we've found that our kids have lost again when we have taken them to all these organized sports where they're adult-driven. The adults are taking care of all the conflict management. They're missing out on just going out and playing for fun. They're losing out on creativity. They're not creating games amongst each other. They're not learning leadership skills. In playing with each other, kids actually develop leadership skills. Also, are losing out on the fact that the adults do the conflict management. When a child gets into a conflict with a kid out in the yard, I don't want to say in the street, don't want kids in the street, but in their yard with the neighbor kids, they figure out how to settle it themselves. We have taken that away from them completely and put it in the hands of the adults.
Hmm.
And while it seems silly to say we need to just let them play, it's really true.
Yeah.
It's really true. There's an article called Just Let the Kids Play, and I love just the title of the article, and it's completely about this. I can't remember who wrote it. But it's a fabulous article on the things that kids have lost because we've taken the art of play away from them.
Mm. And for them to see us engage in play with them, just I really think does so much for their soul, you know? I think that's
so true. Mm. We laugh when we play. And there's something bonding when you laugh together.
Mm, so good. Well, we just have a few minutes left if you want to ask Rosanne a question. I think we've got one, maybe two copies of her book left. And maybe you can share with us what you've learned about simplifying your life and the benefit of it. Love to hear from you. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Would love to hear from you. And so talk about, you know, you addressed the issue of boundaries in the book. And I would love for you to connect that with the struggle of people-pleasing and how much that ties into this rat race mentality, that so much of what we do is out of obligation and really not a sense of call from the Lord.
So true. We are pulled into things because we think, and it's really confusing when you're talking about the church, particularly in ministry. You can get pulled into things thinking that you're doing them for God. And sometimes you don't have to say yes to everything just because it appears to be spiritual. People will walk up to you and say, "God loves you, and I have a plan for your life." And that's not true. I found myself getting pulled into things and saying yes to everything. And honestly, Susie, it was because I wanted to please people. Just as you said, I wanted to please people. And if I didn't please people, I was letting them down, but I was also letting myself down. And what I had to come to terms with was that it was an arrogance and pride on my part that God couldn't do all of these things without me. He needed me in every little thing.
Mm.
And that's just not true.
Mm.
It's just not true.
So when you have someone asking you, would you do this or that, and your plan is to not have plans, it's to be home, how do you respond to that? So, or do you feel like, you know, less is more? My hubby's just so secure that he would be happy to say, nope, you know, I can't do that. And I would be like, well, and I'd go into my whole big reason. But how is that hard for you?
You know, it is hard for me, but over the years I've developed a response. When someone asks me to do something, and it's been an agreement between my husband and I say, you know what, I've got to pray about that. I really do. And sometimes God does confirm that I should do that, you know, but there's a lot of times, especially in a large church that we're in, where He doesn't want me to do everything. Mm. And so Randy and I just have this agreement that we have to talk to each other before we make commitments that are long-term.
Yeah.
Like serving on the board of something or, and we also, the immediate response is, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm going to pray about it and I'm going to seek if this is what God has for me.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Kevin and I do too. And those two things sure are so helpful, to pray and to talk with your spouse and bounce it off, because I think those hasty yeses are the ones that we regret the most. And,
yeah.
You know, when you bring it back to the Lord, there are times He does surprise you and says, no, this is something I actually want you to do. So say a word about the whole idea of how I think if we're not careful, boundaries can become selfish. I just know for me where I feel like the world's going to suck me dry. And so sometimes my arms get locked this way. And I don't have a problem saying no because I know how much I can handle. But there's a point where there's times that He calls us to sacrifice. So say just a word about that boundaries are extremely important. But then there's, you know, man makes his plan, but the Lord still determines our steps.
That's absolutely true. You do have to put reasonable boundaries. You have to protect things that are important to you, like we protected the dinner hour. That just became, if something was at dinner, we cut it out because we knew that that was not God's will for our family. He's shown us clearly
that we needed to do that. Or, however, to say no to everything, you limit God's power. So what I do is I find that God calls me to do things where I have certain gifts and talents and skills that He has given me. And so when I get involved in something that is that goes along with my skill set that He has put in me, I'm energized by
that's
that,
right.
by serving. However, when I say yes to something that is not of my skill set, more than likely I'm going to be drained dry trying to get that thing done. And by golly, it usually means I wasn't the one that was supposed to do that. And I've kept that person from serving, whoever that would have been.
So agree. So,
absolutely. That's the number one thing for me.
So good. We have time for this one more call. So I'm going to welcome Sherry to the show. We are on the air with Roseanne. Welcome, Sherry.
Hey, Sherry. Roseanne, thank you, thank you. We raised three fine boys, and we did have them, like, in a sport after school, but it was just, like, way back. You know, they're all adults now. But never interfered with our lunch or anything. And, you know,
right.
you only get one chance at this bonding time. And we wouldn't trade it for anything. And I feel so bad for the kids now. They, like you said, they're just so overcommitted, and they're not getting their rest and not eating right. And I wouldn't trade how we raised our family for anything. You're really telling it the way it should be. It was wonderful times eating together and spending all that time. And to this day now, we're all bonded so well because we spend so much time together.
Good work.
That's wonderful. And the things that you did with your kids, you probably kept it at a manageable level where you could do them together, so you were involved together. This idea that we're putting our kids in a car and dropping them off at soccer practice and going to take the other one to baseball practice, and everybody's disconnected, really.
Yeah.
That's where it comes to cross the line.
You know, you hear about professional athletes, and I'm always so surprised when you hear, you know, I didn't even know I liked the sport till I tried it in school in junior high, and then he excels, you know. And so if you have a child who you feel like has a gift in this, I mean, go to the park as a family and say, okay, you do sprints. You climb on the jungle gym. I don't know. There's got to be creative ways to do this and do it as a family so that we're not sacrificing so much. And I've got to believe, especially with sports bleeding into the Sundays, the weekends, there's just no respect at all for family time anymore.
There really isn't.
What an unbelieving world thinks when they're looking at Christians who are running themselves ragged, you know?
Yeah, I wonder what they see.
Yeah. Ooh. I want what she has.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in the book, you cited a Swedish study which said that middle-aged men who recently endured high levels of stress had a little emotional support were three times as likely to die over the next 7 years as those with close personal ties. That's kind of amazing. And so men who are living at high stress, low support, three times as likely to die over the next 7 years. It's almost like a heart attack waiting to happen. So maybe speak to the men, since we have so many male listeners. Maybe that man's like, that's me, high stress, low support. What are some things he can do even today?
If you do have high stress, it increases your chance of heart attacks, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, and autoimmune disorders. And they're finding that becoming more and more true of women as well. So we're not far behind, ladies.
Yeah.
I hate to say that. And it actually contributes. They have found out, the American Institute of Stress published a study that said that the lack of social connectedness can predict mortality rate as well as elevated cholesterol levels.
Wow.
And it contributes to illness and death as much as smoking. So my husband likes to say, if you must smoke, please don't do it alone. Do it in community. And you're at least increasing your chances.
That's
but hilarious. apart from smoking together, some of the things you can do is, you know, guys need to have a hobby. Men particularly need to have a hobby that they do to relieve stress, and women too. What is it that replenishes you? Where is it that God refreshes your soul? You know, Psalm 23 says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me beside the quiet waters. He restores my soul. And that's why he wants us to rest. We're not only spiritually refreshed, we are physically refreshed. And so for a lot of men, I find that they have to be doing something. They're not going to go take a nap like I am. It's golf for my husband. Having a group of friends that he can, you know, just go and have fun and laugh with can relieve stress.
And
staying on the rhythms, the daily rhythm, and putting your work down at 6 o'clock is one of the major things that will relieve stress. You would think it would increase it because you're not getting everything done. But when in fact you get more done. You really only have 4 hours of productivity in you a day, the studies have shown us. And so after that time, you're just kind of talking at the water cooler, whatever you're doing, your mind is wandering. So get in there, be productive while you're there at work, and then come home and get refreshed for the next day when you go in, and you'll get more done.
So good. Well, I'm going to have you pray in just a moment, but this is a tiny bit off topic, but you have to share your spiced coffee recipe because you share a couple recipes in the book. Why don't you share that one? I know it's a popular one.
It's really fun, and we're going into summer, the heat of summer, but oh man, in the winter when it's cold outside, it really tastes good. It's called Simple Spiced Coffee, and you basically take about 5 cups of water, more if you like weaker coffee, and 1/2 cup of strong ground coffee. I like it strong, and you can use whatever brand you like. And then actually in the grounds, put it in the coffee maker, and then in the grounds add 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/8 teaspoon of ground cloves, 1/4 teaspoon of ground nutmeg, and then 1/4 cup of unpacked brown sugar. Or you can substitute the blend of brown sugar if you want to. And then brew it just like you would any other pot of coffee. And when you pour it into your cup, you can even put whipped cream topping on it if you want, just a little Ready Whip or whatever. Or you can use regular cream if you want to save on calories.
That is wonderful. And, Rosanna, it's still a little chilly in the upper Midwest, so we're all about the spiced coffee.
Good.
Wow, this has been delightful, and we're running out of time, but I just want to say thank you so much for your time today and appreciate it so much. Bless you, friend.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Lord, I pray a blessing on Rosanna and everybody listening today that we would find our simple lifestyle, Lord, one that honors you and one that gives us rest. We love you. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and you've been listening to Live the Promise. You can find this whole program at our website at myfaithradio.com. Share this with a friend, and remember, you can also find podcasts at our website from Faith Radio Mornings, Connecting Faith, and Everyday Relationships. Finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.